I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
He works so hard. His fitness level is so good. It's pretty difficult to simulate the intensity of NHL game situations. And I'm sure that was an adjustment for him. But it sure didn't appear to be an adjustment for him for the rest of us, I think.
And with that, let me be the first to say good morning to you from 93.7 The Fan. This is the Early Morning Show. I'm Matt Cole here with you to about 5:40. It's the start of a new day brought to you by Greenbrier Treatment Center, 5:04 on a Wednesday morning. And that, of course, the voice of the head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, Mike Sullivan, talking about a man who came back last night and really made a triumphant return to the lineup for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And that, of course, was Sidney Crosby, and a guy that, as he said, you can't really kind of simulate game action, but when you've got a guy like Sid and as talented as he is, it really doesn't matter in the end. And that's where I want to start this morning. Of course, the big storyline coming out of last night's action was Sidney Crosby. And as far as the actual game goes, which I think feels like it's kind of secondary to what it meant for Sid and for this team, everything was rolling for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They end up winning this game 7-3, and it was a really no contest halfway through the game when the Penguins were up 4-0, just rolled from there. Bruce Boudreau on the other side for Minnesota screwed up from the very beginning and lost a D-man before the game even started because he listed the wrong guy and as scratched, and then the scratched guy had to be actually scratched because he dressed in the beginning, and in the end, they went out with 5 D-men to start this game. So, great start on that side for Minnesota. That's when you knew it was the Penguins' night. Pittsburgh theme night, of course. You know it was a great night when Alex Galchenyuk got in on the action, and he scored the 7th goal in this game. And I love that Mike Sullivan kept the second line together, now the second line, which was the first when Sidney Crosby was out, that had been so dominant without Sid. Cahoon, Malkin, Rust. Malkin and Rust showed off their chemistry again, a drop pass to Rust from Geno to make it 3-0 in this game, and the route was on, and Sully actually talked about just how good that line has been for him.
When those guys come through the neutral zone with speed, the threat they can pose. So I think, you know, Rusty is, his north-south speed is as good as it gets. And I think Dom and Gino were just so good at holding on to pucks, creating time and space, allowing plays to develop. And so they've had pretty good chemistry since we put them together.
And that was part of the discussion while Sid was close to making his comeback, right? How are the lines going to shape up behind him whenever he comes in? How are they going to fit these pieces in with Sidney Crosby upon his return? And I think it was an interesting decision to drop Tanev down to that fourth line. I don't know if he's going to stay there. Got plenty of, I guess, ice time as a fourth liner, but interesting with how well that he has played over the last week or so that you drop him down. And also with Sid comes Dominic Simone. We know that. We've come to expect it now. And he's back on the top line with Sidney Crosby. And if it makes Sid happy, I guess you just do it. And I just wonder how long it lasts or whether it lasts. And it feels like it was a obvious decision to put Jared McCann on a wing with Sidney Crosby. And so the first line, at least for last night, looked very good. I don't know if that was just Sid doing all the work there or if they're going to stick with that top line moving forward. But I look at another thing to come out of this game, aside from Sidney Crosby, and of course I'll get to that. Josh Rountree, our own Josh Rountree from 93.7 The Fan, tweeted this out after the game, and it's from Zach Parise on the other side for Minnesota. And this is the now multiple times where an opposing player after the game goes out of his way to just compliment and comment on what the Penguins are doing out there and how they're different from any other team that they are facing. And this is from Zach Parise from last night. Quote, their puck support all over the ice was crazy. It was like they always had three guys on the puck, offensively and defensively. They come at you 100 miles per hour. They made it really tough. Again, multiple players are doing that throughout the year now. More credit heaped on Mike Sullivan. You can't say enough about the job that he is doing so far this season and getting these guys to buy in and to play at a level in which even opposing players look at and are amazed by on the other side. And I just wonder now, coming away from this game, with Sidney Crosby back and seeing them dominate against a Wild team, okay, it's Minnesota. What's the hole, though? Like, where is the weakness? Where is the hole on this team right now? In the past couple seasons, it was that they didn't bring the same style of play night in and night out. And maybe last year, I don't think they ever reached a full identity, if you will. They never really decided what kind of style of play they were going to use and going to win with. And they got bounced in the first round of the playoffs. And maybe in years past, it was also Matt Murray, who was a little bit shaky in the regular season, wasn't quite the same guy, and you went into the playoffs just wondering how well he was going to do, and it kind of fell apart there as well. But with this team, where's the hole? Where's the weakness? How don't they make a deep playoff run at this point with Sid back? And, of course, with Crosby was another stroke of greatness from him, and every time he was out there on the ice, his impact was felt. He was back to possessing the puck like really nobody else can, and that's what separates him. Is, you know, he's got a few like signature moves. You know, he protects the puck so well. He loves to kind of make hay behind the net. Did that again last night, making plays that nobody even thinks to make, like how he used the back of the net to kind of turn direction and to set up the Dominic Simone goal. And another one of his great comebacks throughout his career. And he has had multiple. And I don't know if this one reaches the level as the one that you think of most, maybe with Sidney Crosby, going back to 2011, November of 2011, where he comes back after missing 61 games, comes back against the Islanders, and really that marked that Sidney Crosby, that his career was going to continue. We didn't know that. I mean, there was so much uncertainty around all the concussion stuff, signified that he was the same guy again, kind of his mini Mario moment, where Mario moment, in which he kind of comes back. You weren't sure if you were going to see the same player ever again, but he shows up in the same way, and this was right underneath that last night, in my opinion. With that being said, speaking of Mario, I kind of have a question with seeing Sidney Crosby come back like that last night. And you can weigh in on this at 412-928-9370. Will Sidney Crosby's legacy ever reach that of Mario Lemieux? And this isn't to pit them against each other, because I think we do that way too often. Just did that with the Mike Tomlin and Bill Cowher thing, where we kind of compare generations, and it turns into an argument of like, you're either for Cowher or you're for Tomlin. This isn't like this with Lemieux and Crosby. But will Sid's legacy ever reach the heights that Mario's did, or that his is right now? What if Sid leads them to another cup this year? What if he wins two or three more? And how far behind is he in kind of the face of the Pittsburgh Penguins as far as organizational in their history? If you get caught up in the numbers, I don't know. You can look at, Lemieux scored so many goals in this season or so many points in this season. The numbers kind of change with generations of the games, and it was a different era. But for me, it never does. I don't think Sidney Crosby, his legacy match up to Mario's, because I think we kind of remember the first of things. Like, he represented the first success of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, we remember the very first of something that came in and changed the game. Like, there have been other streaming services other than Netflix, but we remember Netflix because they were the first ones. They were the driving force. There have been other smartphones out there, but we remember Apple's because Apple was the first one to really make it popular and to do it first. And his legacy as a player, I think, is it's a unique situation because it's enhanced by everything he's done afterward. Because he helped save the franchise from going to Kansas City. Because he's, you know, a part owner and everything. And he's still involved to this day. So maybe his legacy, Sid's legacy, never reaches Mario's. But just an interesting question of, you know, is there anything that Sid can do on the ice to ever get at least to that level? An interesting question to ponder. And great to see, of course, Sidney Crosby back last night. And I think, for my money, with Crosby back in the fold, I've been saying this, I've been beating this drum now for a couple weeks, that I think they're at least getting to the Eastern Conference Finals this year. And it just more and more as this goes on. I don't see the weakness in this team. I just don't see it. And I don't see how they don't make a deep playoff run at this point. All right, coming up next, a few headlines around the sports world from yesterday that you may have missed. And then the Pitt Panthers with another heartbreaker last night. I'll go over some of the impact of that. And there is one potential trade that's going to happen in sports that, for me, is off-putting to the max. And I'll go over that. It's the Early Morning Show on 93.7 The Fan. The Early Morning Show here on 93.7 The Fan. I'm Matt Cole here with you to about 5:40 before the Fan Morning Show pre-show. A few things to react to from last night in case you missed them. Let's do it.
Time now for While Yins Was Sleeping on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
All right, you heard all about the cheating scandal in Major League Baseball right now with the Houston Astros and the suspensions coming down on their GM Jeffrey Luhnow, and then of course, the manager AJ Hinch, both of those guys being fired by the Astros. And then yesterday, with just punishment impending on Alex Cora, who is the bench coach and seemed to be the architect of everything that was going on with that scandal, the Red Sox parted ways with Alex Cora yesterday. And kind of an offshoot of everything that's going on there, there is a minor league affiliate of the New York Yankees. Their short season Class A affiliate has already announced a promotion on September 3rd. So what does that have to do with any of this? Well, the first 500 fans to pass through the gates will receive a miniature trash can with the home team's logo on it. So for $16, fans can get a ticket right behind the visitor's dugout and bang away on their small scale model to their heart's content to just kind of poke fun at the Houston Astros. It is interesting to see what they'll do with Alex Cora and what, I mean, obviously he's not, doesn't have a job right now with Boston, but, you know, what his future will be in baseball beyond this. And also with Carlos Beltran out in New York, does he even manage a game with the New York Mets? As he was involved with all of this, he was with the Houston Astros organization as well. So it'll be interesting to see what they do there. I don't know. It seems right that he shouldn't manage a game, really, if he is just as involved as everybody else in this thing, and they're getting suspended for a year, then why not Carlos Beltran? And if he's suspended for a year, there's no way the Mets are going to stick with him. So beyond that 1 year, I wonder if he ever manages a game. In my opinion, probably shouldn't. All right, and also from yesterday, a man who is one of the best at his position in the NFL, and maybe we should come to expect this more and more, announces his retirement at just 28 years of age, and that is linebacker Luke Kuechly of the Carolina Panthers. And he made his announcement via social media and also released a video on it. And here's some thoughts on Luke Kuechly.
I think now is the right chance for me to move on. And it makes me sad because I love playing this game. I've played it since I was a little kid, and it's my favorite thing in the world to do. And the memories I have from this place and this organization and playing on the field with these guys, they'll never go away. And sitting right now in the linebacker room, and the amount of memories I've had from this room alone could fill a book. And these are the best times of playing. Obviously, on the field is awesome, but some of the best times of playing this game are behind the scenes in the locker rooms, in these meeting rooms, on the buses, traveling the games. You can't replicate that anywhere else, and that's why this is so hard to do, to move on in a different direction. But in my heart, I know it's the right thing to do, and it's hard, but that's why you play this game to form relationships, and if you formed strong relationships, they never go away.
Yeah, Luke Kuechly, of course, not the first guy to retire early from the NFL, something, a trend that is becoming more and more prevalent as this thing goes on. I mean, he's not the first star player also to retire early. You think of guys like even Rob Gronkowski from last season. He was 29. Andrew Luck from last year. He was 29, surprised everybody with his retirement, of course. Cam Chancellor a few years ago at the Seahawks, he was only 30. And Calvin Johnson was only 30 as well. So a lot of these guys, it's not just the Jason Worlds of the world that are retiring early from the NFL. It is these big-time names. And maybe as a fan of football and, you know, as a Steelers fan, who, you know, wherever, across the league, you can't take these guys and their careers for granted. And almost you can't expect them to come back in the next season as a guarantee, especially if they get close to the age of 30. I mean, all these guys, Gronk, Luck, Chancellor, Johnson, and now Kuechly, these are all guys that were still at the tops of their positions and went out early. And so you just never know year to year what these guys are going to do. And that's the nature, I guess, of the NFL. And honestly, it's probably, if they want to make that decision, I can't blame them. I really can't. With all of the different health issues that are coming out now, with all of the years in the NFL that these guys have played and the health issues after they play, it's almost a good thing that if they're on the fence about whether or not they want to keep pushing their bodies, that they just retire at this point, as much as that sucks to say and to hear as a fan, because that's one of the best linebackers in the league that just retired from the Carolina Panthers. All right, coming up next, Pitt with a tough loss in overtime last night. I'll go over some of that and one potential trade that could, I don't know if it's really going to change the landscape of things, but it's just more piling on to the issue. And that's coming up next. It's the start of a new day brought to you by Greenbrier Treatment Center, 529 on your Wednesday morning. And the Pitt Panthers last night fall in OT to the Louisville Cardinals. First, though, I want to talk about a potential trade in Major League Baseball that I'm seeing more and more rumors of. I saw this, I think, over the weekend first, and now more is coming out about it. So the St. Louis Cardinals are eyeing up. Now, we saw what teams already in the NL Central have done, like the Cincinnati Reds, and going out and getting Mike Moustakas, Wade Miley, and just continuing to build up their roster. And now the St. Louis Cardinals and the Colorado Rockies have swapped names in talks for Nolan Arenado, one of the top third basemen in the league. And exchanging names, that's far away from it being a done deal, of course. But John Morosi of MLB.com is reporting at least that, and they want both major league and minor league talent back, Colorado does, including Dakota Hudson, who's kind of would be the headliner back in trade talks for Colorado. But just seeing these kinds of things. And I know that I don't know, I feel like I kind of rip the Pirates a lot, but they make it a pretty easy. I just see, you know, I don't see a whole lot out of Major League Baseball right now in the offseason with, you know, headlines that I necessarily take a lot of interest in. You know, I see that the Twins signed Josh Donaldson to a 4-year, $92 million deal. Okay, that's fine. American League, whatever. But it feels like everything out of the National League comes back to the NL Central, and this is another case of that, where the Cardinals are in on one of the best men at their position, and this time at third base with Nolan Arenado, a guy who would come in and essentially bump Matt Carpenter off of a starting spot. And I don't know, it just is more bleak and more bleak for this 2020 season. I hate to be that negative, but it's something that just caught my eye yesterday, and just going through some baseball news. But the Pitt Panthers, let's move on to them, shall we? Because I can't go any further with this conversation about the Pirates. They lose an OT in the end to Louisville, 73-68. And a game in which they were up by a little bit at least at the half and really shot well in that first half, but end up on the wrong side of things. And there was a terrible call, in my opinion, on Terrell Brown in overtime, where he reaches up for a rebound. The ball is tipped. It would have tied the game at 70 in overtime, but instead, no bucket. Foul is called on Brown. He fouls out, and really just a huge change of momentum in that game. And if that bucket goes in, and if it counts, Who knows what the final score is? And Jeff Capel was beside himself on the sideline. And he was asked about it after the game, and smartly said this.
I'm not commenting on any call, anything that an official made. I can't. I don't want to lose money.
There you go. I don't want to get fined, but it was, I don't know. You can look at all the replays, look at all the angles that you want. I just don't see a foul there. I really don't. But there, you know, they made mistakes to get into overtime, and Capel also recognizes that.
When you're playing against really good teams and elite teams, and Louisville, I think, is an elite team, they make you pay for stuff like that. And that's what talent, that's what guys that are older, and that's what elite does. They make you pay when you make mistakes.
So I think there's two factors that emerge in these Pitt games and what they might do from here on out. And I think you look for kind of two things to see if Pitt's going to have a chance in the game, because they've been up and down, they've, you know, throughout this ACC season. I think there's two factors that emerge. The first is when Justin Champagne is as good as Johnson and McGowan's, they can beat just about anyone in the ACC outside of the Duke Blue Devils, who did lose last night to Clemson. But Champagne had a double-double last night. 11 points, 11 rebounds. If he is playing up to that level, and I know it's a lot to kind of heap on a freshman, but they're that young and he's that important to this team. If he's even close to the same level as Johnson and McGowan's, they have a chance to beat just about every team in the ACC, because they've shown all of them, really, to be beatable this year. And a 2-4 record might look bad for Pitt in the ACC right now, but they're really not out of things. And I think as far as, you know, out of things, what exactly does that mean? I'm talking around a 500 record that gets them into postseason play. And the other factor that emerges, I think, in these games is the three-point shooting for Pitt. And that's kind of maybe an obvious point in basketball nowadays with the game that's so centered around three-point shooting. But if they don't shoot well from three from the very beginning, I mean, Ryan Murphy made two right away last night, and so the Panthers were in it. But if they aren't from the very beginning shooting well from three, that's when you can kind of put the nail in the coffin for Pitt in these ACC games. So I think those are the two factors that emerge. I think it's going to be up and down throughout the rest of the season. You're never going to quite know what Pitt team is going to show up game to game, and that's just, I think, a product of being young and still figuring things out under Jeff Capel, and figuring things out with this group of players. And I think, you know, I've said this before, Capel's the right guy. It's just going to take a lot of patience to get where they want to be. Fan weather is brought to you by Sun Chevrolet and McMurray. Drive the car or truck of your dreams with great deals all month. Today, sun and clouds and a high of 53. And then tonight, a couple of snow showers late and a low of 35. The Fan Morning Show pre-show is next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.